And this is Ricky Gantz, and you're about to be listening to G220 Radio. Tonight's topic is called to pastor here and then here and there. We'll explain what that's about when we get into the program here tonight. All right, and welcome to another episode of G220 Radio. I'm Ricky Gantz with Natty P and Mike Miller, and together we are G220 Radio. And tonight, as I said, we've got episode number 425, called to pastor here and then here and there, and I will explain that a little bit as we get into this. This is a topic that kind of came up, and as I said, I'll explain a little more when we get into it, but I think we're going to have a really good conversation. We have with us also Pastor Jason Hilliard, and we'll introduce him and let you know a little bit about him himself here in a minute. But Mike, how we doing, brother?
Doing pretty good. A little tired. Work has been stressful, probably more than thankfully in a sense, but yeah, tired. Worked a lot last couple weeks.
Yeah. And Natty P, the original, not secondary, not fake, but he is the original Natty P. What's going on with you, brother?
Not much. I'm just excited that it is spring and it's warm. I hate being cold. But my favorite thing about spring, it was just cold and winter a couple months ago. And it reminds me of God, how faithful God is to his promises, because he said that winter and summer and seed time and harvest would continue. And yet again, it does. So we have a faithful God, and it's great.
Yeah. Amen. Amen to that. And our guest tonight is not new to good weather. He is from Texas. He is the pastor of Faith Baptist Church down there in Duncanville. He's been on the program before, Jason Hilliard. Welcome back to G220 Radio.
Thank you, man. Appreciate you guys having me. I always enjoy being on the air with you guys.
Why don't you go ahead and let the listeners know who maybe are seeing you for the first time a little bit about yourself. As I mentioned, I know you're down there in Texas. You probably don't get any cold weather, or cold to our standard, maybe. But
not cold to your standard. Cold for us, you know. Our worship pastor, he's from Wisconsin, and his wife is from Calgary. So when we talk about cold, they kind of laugh at us. But it does get it. You know, we get our share of cold weather. The kind of the crazy thing about here is kind of what's been going on the last week or so. Today was 85 degrees. 2 days ago, it was 40 degrees. So tomorrow is supposed to be 90, and then it's supposed to be back down to 50 degrees. So it's sort of up and down with some pretty severe extremes, more so than, you know, lots of hard cold for a long time. And then once the summer gets here, we know nothing but heat and humidity and sweat and death for about 4 months. So,
yeah, I know when I was in the military and we had to do a railhead down at Fort Hood. That was the hottest for me. I was like, I can't handle this heat, man.
It can get pretty brutal if you're not, especially if you're not used to it. It can be pretty bad.
Yeah. Mike, you were shaking your head there. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was deployed over in the Southwest Asia area, and the temperature never dropped below triple digits. At one point on the ramp I worked on, so I'm surrounded by airplanes, which is metal and cement. It was daily 180 degrees on the ramp. It was so hot. My feet were burning because of the steel in my boots. It was awful. Wow. Never again do I want to go to such a hot place. It felt good to be in DC, and it was only like 99 degrees.
Yeah. So, Jason, why don't you go ahead and let the listeners know a little bit about yourself as well?
Yeah, so as you said, pastor of Faith Baptist Church in Duncanville, Texas. That's about 15 minutes south of Dallas. To give anybody that's not familiar with Duncanville kind of some bearings. I started my 9th year there in February, so it'll be 10 years this coming February, and just, you know, several months away. Love it here, love the town, love the area, love the Metroplex. Married 17 years, be 18 years this September. We have 4 children ranging from age 14, fixing to be 15, and then all the way down to 3 years old. So life is busy, 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 nonstop. But yeah, I really, really enjoy this area. Grew up in Texas, always lived in Texas. I've never been outside of Texas as far as residence goes. And Lord willing, I don't have any intentions of being anywhere else. So I'd like to retire here, having preached through the whole New Testament at some point.
That's definitely a good goal to do. Preaching through the New Testament, probably going to take you, you know, what, 30, 40 years maybe?
Well, it took John MacArthur 40 years, so I'm not as smart as him. Maybe just 25 for me. I don't know. We'll see if I can stretch it out as long as he did.
Just don't do the Piper. It took him like 8 years to go through the Gospel of John. I don't stretch it out too much.
When I preached through John, I think it took me 2.5, nearly 3 years. Romans took 2.5 years. We're in Matthew right now. We're only in chapter 8, and we've been there for about 48 weeks. So every time, each time we start a new book, it seems like it stretches out a little bit longer. I'm happy for that. I'm thankful for that.
Yeah. Now, as I was saying, this topic came about because I'd asked this question on my Facebook page. And I'll give you guys a little background. I'm not going to mention names, but in my experience that I've seen in churches in the area, one church in particular I've seen where a pastor actually just recently had this church was without a pastor, and another individual was coming in as a church planter for that area, and they decided, well, since this church is looking for a pastor and you're trying to plant a church in the same area, why don't we just mesh these two together? So they went ahead and did this, and this man was the pastor there for a few years and then stepped down as the pastor there and is moving off to somewhere else. And his reasoning is he was not called to be a church planter, but a pastor. And then we have another situation where I've seen where there was a pastor who moved from one location out east to plant a church out west. And then from this church plant out west, his brother joined him as a co-pastor with him. And then he came to a church locally in the area. After a little while, his brother came with him and pastored at this church. Then the brother who came with him believed he was called to pastor in a church in a local city that was close to the one that we are in. He went to pastor there for a few months. During that time, his brother left the church where he was to go back east home and take over as from a lead pastor to a youth pastor in a bigger church that had other pastors there. And then this other pastor who planted, his brother who planted in a church close, wanted to come back to that church and, you know, be the lead pastor there. They turned him down, so he went up north to a church to be a lead pastor. He was there for a little while, and then for whatever reason, he was then back to planting a church in his own home, and then just recently moved out west again to plant or to pastor a church, lead church out there. And in all these situations, I hear this that, well, the Lord has called me here, but then a few months later or a couple years later, the Lord has called me to a new place, which whatever their reasons are, I don't know. It's not my desire in this to judge their motives in that, but it brought a question to my mind is, if God calls you to a place, why is it that we tend to see so many pastors come into a place and maybe they're there for a couple of years and then they up and leave? and go to another place, maybe planting a church somewhere else or taking on a position in another place. And it brought this question up in my mind. And so I asked this question online, and there was a lot of different responses. Pastor Jason was one that did respond. Mike has actually, in his seminary, you've did some study on this too, right?
Yeah, so I had a class at Southern Seminary called Pastoral Ministries, and I really kind of dealt with what does it look like to be a pastor, things from how to do funerals, deciding, you know, if you're going to do when you do weddings, like who you do weddings for, and just kind of life as a pastor, how to kind of gauge these things and to go through, and just the difficulties and the benefits of it. My professor is a pastor who's been at his current church for over 10 years. And just kind of bringing the wisdom in there. So we've talked about some of this as kind of maybe the plague within more congregationalist churches, Baptist kind of free churches.
Yeah. And so we thought this would be a good conversation to maybe talk about it, because there could be reasons why these things happen, why pastors leave. And we don't want to just automatically jump to the negative things, but we also want to address some of the negative things that could be there. And so I've seen also, as you were saying there, Mike, about this professor, you know, being a pastor of his church for 10 years. I've seen faithful pastors that have been able to be in their church for a long period of time, and it seems very beneficial to their flock, very beneficial to them as a pastor. But that's not always the case. As we mentioned MacArthur earlier, you know, been in his church for a very long time. But again, that's not always the case in every situation. So we wanted to kind of talk through some of these things and just see what could be some of the reasons why these pastors are moving. And again, as I said, and even address maybe some of the bad things, Mike, as you said, the plagues or the things that aren't so good that people choose to go from maybe one church to another church in a short period of time. And so, Pastor Jason, why don't you go ahead and kind of lead us off in some of your thoughts on this as we get into this conversation here tonight.
Well, it is a problem. It is definitely a problem where you see guys show up, you know, they're there 2 or 3 years. They were very certain they were called there. And then, you know, 3 years later, they're called to something else, be it a church plant or, you know, another ministry somewhere else, another church or something. I think there's a number of issues. Now, sometimes, and I can speak from experience, what you're sold in the search committees is not what you get when you get there. A lot of times the search committees are comprised of the people who are most desirous to see either things stay exactly the same at the church, depending on the church dynamic, or they're the people most desirous to see things change. But they rarely, if ever, represent an accurate depiction of the whole congregation or even the majority of the congregation. From what I've experienced in myself personally and guys I've talked with. So they sell you on, you know, they put their best foot forward. They roll out the red carpet, as it were, for better or for worse, all these different things. And they talk about, they ask you, you know, what your thoughts are, what your vision is and all this sort of thing. And then you roll it out for them and they're so excited most of the time. And, you know, they give you a guarantee of the congregation's willingness to make those changes. And then you get there and you find out that that's not the case. And it's not that they're lying. A lot of times what happens is the committee will, you know, stand before the church and say something to the effect of, now, folks, you know, we have to be ready for making a change, or maybe making some changes. This will be a new, you know, pastor or worship guy, youth guy, whatever it is. And they're going to do things their way. And everyone will go, oh, yeah, we understand. But in their minds, they're thinking, but he's not going to touch my particular preference. So that's fine if he changes all these other things that I don't care about. But, you know, he better not touch my song or the visitation style or the youth meeting or whatever, you know, it happens to be. And so there's that. And so the guy comes in and he has an anticipation that people are going to be more susceptible to change than what they actually are. Sometimes you get just the opposite. Sometimes they're very open to whatever it, you know, the pastor wants to do, but he leads without much wisdom and he pushes a lot of new change, and the change happened so quickly and he hadn't thought it through very well, and now they're in kind of a mess and things aren't functioning well, and rather than stay to fix it, he just goes. I think that's a beginning point for part of the problem. Another part of the issue is, you know, a church is, it's a ministry. The church is obviously the body of Christ. It's not a building, it's not a place, but we do have physical facilities, and there is a business aspect, only in the sense of we bring in, you know, there's offerings and money given, and then it's used to pay for salaries and expenses and utility bills and things. So there has to be that business aspect, but the problem comes when we decide to run the staffing, pastors and what have you, like a business. And so we put an expectation on these men that says, you've got to have a certain number of years of experience and a certain number of degrees and a certain type of degree, and it needs to be from XYZ seminary. And that discounts the men who are educated and called because they've done their diligence on their own, you know. So you end up getting guys who match up right on paper, but once they get into the position, they don't really have the calling, I guess you'd say, the skill set that comes with the calling, as evidenced by their lack of ability to preach well or lead well, or, you know, whatever it happens to be. And then you have disenchantment between the church and the pastor, and sometimes that can lead to departure as well.
Yeah, I think there's even more to it. I think you talk about the business and kind of, we kind of run church like business, but even added onto that is that you now have this hierarchy too. You start at the small country church and then you move to maybe a medium country church and then maybe a small city church, or, you know, and you have like this progression, and you might even start as like a youth pastor. And then you kind of move up.
Yeah.
And so I do think there is that, that business mentality also in it. Now, not all people have that.
Right.
And it certainly is not the case in church history. I mean, you have Puritans who are just repeatedly 30, 40 years. Now, many of them probably were others who moved around a lot or something like that. But that's definitely not kind of a problem you see as much in church history as we kind of see now with it. And so I think, you know, you bring up some good points. I think we just come at church with a business idea without kind of thinking through what this kind of all means.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Yeah. And that is a great point. That is a large part of it. And you do have guys who have that mentality that, you know, I'm going to put in my dues at the little 15 person church and grow them to 30. And then I'm going to go somewhere else because I'm going to show them that I doubled the attendance. And, you know, one day I'll be in the big pulpits. And I made a comment, I guess it was right before Shepherd's Conference. And this is not a knock at Shepherd's Conference at all in any shape, form, or fashion, but I just made the comment to some friends of mine, and it might've even made it out to Twitter. You know, conference season is the time when all of the well-known pastors tell the non-well-known pastors not to worry about trying to be well-known. And so there's just a little, they're right in what they're saying. There's nothing about pastoral ministry that should ever make a man say, I want to be well-known and famous and book deals and all these things. At the same time, it's a bit double-sided, I would say, to say to a guy, hey, listen, I've got a huge platform and book deals and all these things, but you don't worry about that. You just keep doing what you're doing. They're right that we need to keep doing what we're doing, those who are like myself, who are, you know, not well known or anything. But there's a little bit of a hypocrisy in saying that and then also having that. When I guess my point is when they do their conferences and they bring in the person they're going to platform, they don't go find the faithful pastor that no one's ever heard of, who's just doing a really good job preaching through, you know, Romans or something. They find the guys who everyone, you know, we read their books, we listen to their podcasts, we know who they are, we watch their videos. And I understand that you're not going to draw the same crowd. But then again, I think that's a cultural, church culture problem too. We We should be a church culture that is willing to attend a conference and invest in teaching because it's going to be sound teaching, not only because it's going to be our favorite theologian. And I'm a huge MacArthur fan, Spurgeon fan. I mean, don't get me wrong, but, you know.
I think that's an interesting point that you brought up, and I wasn't even thinking through that until you brought it up. But this idea then, while they're saying, as you said, don't you know, worry about being like that, it tends to, and not for every person, but it tends to kind of put this culture where you are looking to be able to be in a church that's growing, and you do want to maybe influence your church by writing a book that then can be go out there and influence more people, and you don't realize the impact that's having on people. Me personally, I know that conferences, I think conferences are great, but I love listening to guys that are less well known, and I've benefited from learning a lot from guys like that. While still appreciating the guys who have those kind of ministries. But that's a good point. You don't really think about that or think that through, that here they are. They have these big platforms, and these pastors, some of them, they have a very, very small church, and they're just trying to be able to pay their bills. Let me grab this over here. Natty P sending messages in the chat, so let me move that off the screen there. But
technical related.
Yeah. Go ahead. Somebody check over. I'm reading his.
Yeah. So, and I think you can't always, I think kind of as you're talking about that, just at Southern Seminary, now everyone kind of well's known, led by Dr. Al Mohler, but even like chapels at Southern Seminary, as opposed to Liberty. So I'm contrasting kind of the convocations at Liberty, who they just bring whatever. So I've got to hear Rick Warren speak, quote unquote, pastor. But there have been people at Southern Seminary, and they do a good job of this, of just getting faithful Southern Baptist preachers, somewhat close, not always, to come in. People I've never heard of before, and get to hear them to preach. And I appreciate that. I mean, and it's daunting. You're coming to Southern Seminary. Usually they have some sort of connection to Southern to begin with, but you know, now you're teaching in front of all these pastors, people who want to be pastor, who are called to be pastors with that. And so they're, you know, just in my own experience, I like that. But I do think, you know, having those platforms also come with great responsibility. And I think you see, even you, like you said, the Shepherd's Conference, MacArthur just didn't rise to the top. He was faithful in it. So I do think, while there is, I think you're right to notice kind of it, but I'm trying to think of my thoughts here, not try to defend them or anything, but there is that faithfulness in it and to go. But again, like you said, maybe that even fits into the hierarchical, like, oh, I want to be on stage at T4G. Or the Gospel Coalition and whatnot. And again, I think you need to resist that idea. Like that's right. Again, or the wrong view. Again, putting us in that kind of hierarchical. I know it's big when I have that big church. I'm on the conference, the spring conference circuit, teaching at G3. I'm flying back and forth between Ligonier and Shepherd's Conference, and you know, at Gospel Coalition or T4G, whatever is that year. And so I do think, you know, you do, that is that caution there.
Yeah, and I want to be careful to say that, you know, those guys, they're all those different, the major solid, you know, more reformed conferences, those guys are faithful pastors. They've been doing it for years. You know, and if it weren't for God raising up men like John MacArthur, John Piper, I know that maybe his latter days haven't been as helpful as his first, but if it weren't for the J.C. Ryles and the Charles Spurgeons, then we wouldn't have these men who have reflected on Scripture and written great books about grace and redemption. And so God has a purpose for raising those guys up. I think another thing that would be helpful, and I was talking about this with a young man that is a ministry assistant in our church. And that's, you know, I think that we need to be careful as a church culture, not to platform young guys so quickly. Mm-hmm. How many young guys can we name, even solid theologically young guys who rose up real quick and they were doing that conference circuit and then they had a fall? A lot of times it was a moral, an immorality issue of adultery or something, and they fall in very hard and very quickly. When you take a guy like John MacArthur, and he's certainly not infallible and he's not above falling, obviously he's human, but when you have, you know, 40, 45 years of tested true ministry and no blips on the radar, major moral failings, I would be more inclined to want to get that sort of an individual in front of someone rather than the guy who wrote a really great book, but he's kind of young and not very well known and the book's really good, you know? And so we're going to risk his ego to get him on the stage. And then, you know, a lot of times, not all the time, but a lot of the times these guys, you find out they were cheating on their wife, they have an addiction to pornography, you know, some other major thing. And I just think it'd be more helpful I'll be 41 this month. I don't even think I'm at the age yet where I would say I'm old enough to be being platformed like that. Let me give another 5, 10, 15 years and then talk to me about, you know, taking the stage if that were ever something that someone wanted, which I have no desires for. But, you know, I think that's a part of the issue as well. We've created this culture that's the definition of success. You know, if you're invited to speak at the big conferences or your church is huge and you're really well known and people love your podcasts and, you know, your church podcast and these things, that's the definition of success. How many people are there in your building as opposed to how many people are you discipling? I know I've got a friend, a really good friend. His name is Ed Johnson, and he is a church planner. He departed the church he was at as an assistant pastor. He was sort of pushed out, I'll say, through some strange circumstances, nothing, no fault of his own whatsoever. He ends up planting a church in an area of Dallas where there's not a church. I think they're coming up on 3 years now, and he might have 15, 20 to 40 people max on any given Sunday. Man, he's doing some effective work expositorially, reaching that community. They're out in the community on a regular basis, sharing the gospel, the actual gospel, not the watered down version we see so often. I would love to see guys like him. I want to hear from guys like that. You know, talk to me about your struggles as a church planting pastor, just trying to establish the gospel in a church saturated area like Dallas, Texas, you know, as opposed to maybe some of the guys who it's maybe come a little easier for them and they've risen up a little faster and, you know, gotten a shout out from a big name and all of a sudden everyone wants to, you know, kind of know who they are.
You think that could be some of the reason there? Okay, Nathaniel, you're killing me here. Is this better?
A little too loud. Get the medium.
All right, is that good?
That is pretty good.
All right.
Sounds good.
So live in-show sound checks.
Yeah, so could that be some of the issue here with this, where you have a individual that says they're called to a certain place, they're there for a little while, maybe the struggles are real. We all know this, especially those in pastoral ministry know this more so than we do, the three of us hosts of the program, although Mike might know a little better than us, but it's a tough job to pastor a church, to plan a church, to work through the struggling of that, you know, planting a new work, especially. It may take time. It may take many, many years. And maybe that could be one of the reasons why some of these guys jump, is maybe they're not seeing the results in an area where they are, where instead of the focus being on, am I building up this 10 or 15 people that are faithfully coming, I'm looking to have another 15 or 20 people show up and they're not. So let me go to an area, maybe a bigger city or a place where, hey, there's probably going to be more people coming in, you know, that there's that maybe that draw to them where they say, hey, let me move from this place because I'm not seeing people come in, to maybe a place where the community, maybe if you go, like Mike said, a country place to a urban area or city area where you know there's going to be more people, you might be able to reach more people.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. I've literally had a guy, a young pastor, and I offered a loving rebuke for this, tell me that he, with his 20-person congregation that he was pastoring, he'd been there for a few, 3-4 years, he just felt like his knowledge of the Bible was being wasted on just a few when he could go somewhere a little bit bigger and reach more people. Mm. My response was, who are you? What is that mentality? Like, where does that even come from that you would think the one person, maybe even out of all those that's paying attention and you see change in, is not worth it, that you feel like you've got to go try to get 200 where maybe only two people, you know, or even less. The size of the church is no indication of its health one way or the other, as any minister that's been there very long will tell you. And honestly, this is sort of one of those revealing trade secrets type of thing for some of those guys. So once before, when I was a non-expository guy, non-reformed, more Arminian sort, and there are faithful Arminian preachers, but I wasn't one of them. Sometimes God's leading me to another place means I've run out of sermons and I'm going to go somewhere else and just start over again and topically hit these same things. And when I get to the end of my topics list, I'm going to go somewhere else and do it again. When you're committing to preach straight through books of the Bible, you can't do that, because it's going to look really odd to go somewhere and start in the middle of John or the middle of Matthew. And if you've done it long enough, people are going to start noticing, hey, wait a minute, when we interviewed you for this church, you were preaching through Romans at that church and you started Romans here, and now you've gone somewhere else and done the same thing. So sometimes it comes down to that topical preaching is just a well that eventually runs dry. And if a guy feels like I don't have any more creativity, what else? How many times can I do 7 ways to have a happy family? And so it's time to go somewhere else where I can do this fresh and it'll be exciting, and then move on. Mm-hmm. Whereas the word stays fresh when you just commit to go straight through books of the Bible in an expository fashion. You don't have to worry about creativity and all that sort of thing. God takes care of all those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, just to, we mentioned it a little bit earlier, that this is not all cases. There are legitimate reasons why pastors may choose to go to a different church, whether it's family related or just others with it. That it's not every pastor's move is some sort of selfish or wrong leveled.
Right.
But I do think, and kind of move into this way, and I think this gets kind of even with Ricky's thing, and maybe you know, talk about it, is that all of this is on a faulty foundation, and that we have misunderstood what does it mean to be called. And just you'll hear people say, oh yeah, I was like 15 years old and I just felt God's calling that I'm going to be a preacher or something like that. And, you know, conversations with my wife and, you know, in other classes at seminaries, we kind of at times have made this calling mystical
in a
sense.
Yep.
And right. I think, and that's where it comes it kind of comes down at, I think, with all of this, is whether you're leaving a church because of strife or you run out of sermons or because of this or that, that at times it's because kind of eventually I have this calling and I know, you know, God has this great calling for me and this church is not doing it, or this other church is coming and they're bigger and I can have a bigger platform in that. And in that way, instead of, I think, in kind of how you've kind of explained it, is just being faithful. just go to a church and to be faithful. And no matter what happens, you know, don't not being a bull in a china shop, but with wisdom, go to a church and serve until really the Lord kind of stops you. And I think there is more than just a feeling with it that other people notice. I think, and that's the big point, is that people should know. And I think that's where associations can help, where, you know, pastor's like, hey, I have this young man, we've been grooming him, he wants to preach, he's qualified to preach, here, try him out. I think that's where we get it all wrong, is this mystical understanding of calling, right, instead of kind of having a more biblical rooted view.
Yeah, I agree with you there as well. I think it was Vody Balcom was talking about something similar to that here a while back. He said, you know, we make this big mistake in a young man will suddenly get zealous for the Lord, either, you know, through a very recent conversion as a teenager, or as he grows, he gets more mature and he'll become very zealous and demonstrate some ability to preach. And we automatically want to ship him off to seminary and then get him into ministry somewhere. He said, sometimes it's not that God's calling that individual to go and be a pastor somewhere, but just to be maybe a faithful church member who knows scripture well at that church, or a faithful elder at that church, lay elder, or even just a faithful deacon or something. It's not necessarily that. He said his point was that sometimes we think we recognize this mystical calling. And I like the way you phrased that, when it's really just God maturing someone the way that he should. And so we end up leaving churches bankrupt of mature men.
Yeah.
That actually has somewhat been my experience early on, is whenever I started, being interested in the things of God after my conversion and devouring books and being extremely excited about theology and telling people about Jesus and evangelism, everybody said, oh, you should be a pastor. And something that I'm reminded of is in a toast to Screwtape, I believe. Screwtape or whoever's given the toast talks about how sometimes the stocks all around want to chop down the higher stocks, and I'm wondering if some of that comes into play with. That similar circumstance, you know what I mean? Someone sees someone progressing well in the faith, being a mature man, as you've indicated, and their first inclination isn't, oh, how do we work together so that I can be as you are? It's maybe you're from a different cut from different cloth or something.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, the mystical nature of it. And again, yeah, there are legitimate reasons why guys leave. I haven't been at this church my entire ministry. I started out here, actually, interestingly enough, as the youth pastor, but I was bivocational. The stress and strain of having a full-time job in the downtown, heart of downtown Dallas, a new child, my first child, and a bivocational ministry, because there's really no such thing as a bivocational pastor. They're putting in full hours, youth pastors, the whole thing. The stress was tremendous on me personally, on my health. And so my wife and I prayed about it, and we decided, you know, this church can't offer full-time youth pastorate. So we're going to seek out a church that can. We sought one out. It moved us away. I will say it was one of the most painful experiences of my life, what we went through there with that pastor. But at the same time, I wouldn't go back and change any of it, because it's what God used to really sober me up and bring, in the theological sense, and bring me out of all the goofiness that I was into. I was the youth pastor, you know, back in those days that we're going to spend a lot more time in youth meetings doing, you know, disgusting games than we are studying the Bible. And I look back on those times now and I'm just ashamed about it. But it was through the treatment the pastor gave us there, which was less than pastoral, that God really used it to open my eyes and grow me up and mature me in a lot of ways that should have already happened. And I wouldn't change it for anything now. And so once the opportunity came to come back to this church where we're at now, and when their pastor retired and become the pastor here, I really and truly, there was a sense to me of like, I almost like I owed it to them to come back and correct a lot of the mistakes I'd made as a youth minister. But also I loved the people. Even after we had left the church to go somewhere else, we never lost touch with them. That's not true for any other church that we were at. But even coming back, having already had 3 years experience here as their youth pastor, which may have worked more against me than in my favor. But now being here for 9 years, I can tell you that even coming back already knowing pretty well everyone that was there, with the exception of a few that had joined in the interim time we were gone, it still took me a good 5 years before I felt like everyone immediately called me their pastor. Within about 2 years, people began to slowly treat me like their pastor, but with respect to leading any sort of changes and adjustments, it probably took a good 5 years. And even still, if the topic of change comes up, there's still eyebrows that kind of raise. And so, you don't want to go in and be harsh and quick and hurt anyone. You want to teach and teach slowly and be faithful and teach it again and teach it again. And then a few more times teach it, because it takes time for you to get it. It's going to take time for them to get it as well. And so you can't do that. You can't have that faithfulness in teaching and pouring at it and pouring away and living life with people if you're just there for 2 and 3 years and then you take off for the bigger, better thing. But there are legitimate reasons. I know of a couple of guys who've moved because they had parents that were ailing and they wanted to be able to take care of them. There was no one else to take care of them, so they moved. You know, were they right or wrong to leave their ministry at the church they were at to go do that? I'm not going to say, but I would say I have a hard time holding something like that against them. If it's just not working, the church is just not responding to you, you've burnt the bridges, or they've never received you well, or you've got a dead church situation, I can see where for the well-being of your family, you don't need to sacrifice your family on the altar of ministry. Sometimes it's worth the move. Money, it's not all about money, but money, we have to have money to live in this world, unfortunately. If you're just absolutely not able to provide not the extras for your family, but even the basics for your family, the church can't do it. I can understand if a guy says, I've got to find a place that, will allow me to be full-time here if that's what I'm intending to do, but can also take good care of my family versus sticking it out and being poor. That old adage, keep the pastor poor, you keep him humble, is a bunch of nonsense. If you deliberately do that, you just make him bitter. So, not every guy is looking just to be the next circuit guy or anything, but I'm a fortune. Unfortunately, I think there's more often than not, maybe that's the case.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think when you consider in some of the stuff I learned in my class, I mean, the average person that stays kind of in the pastorate, so senior pastor, lead pastor, whatever you may call it, it's only about 3.5 to 6 years, which is not a very long time. And it's not a long time to impact people.
Right.
Especially when you only see them, and a lot of churches nowadays, 1 hour a week. Right. And just that progressive sanctification takes time. And, having that quick turnaround does not only the churches that experience it the most harm. They can't grow deep. They're constantly changing with that. I have a friend who's a pastor in St. Louis, and we've had him on the show, and just his own, he is like the fifth pastor in the past 15 years, 20 years, something like that, after having a pastor, the longest tenured, there for 20 years.
Wow.
And now the church is kind of in a position that if they get rid of him, they're probably going to have to close the door. So he's kind of, they're in a kind of a catch-22 with him, though he's not like using that against them.
Sure.
And any mean like that, but just, having that long-term plan, I'm going to come in here and I'm going to be faithful until God, you know, shows me, leads me to someplace else, which may not be a bigger church. It might be something else. And I think that's where we consider that, and just that the first kind of 10 years of pastoral ministry are tough. With it, and the class I took, my professor told us on average a pastor will have a fight within his first year, about the 3 year mark, about the 5 year, 5 to 6 year mark, and then just before that 10 year mark. That's 4 skirmishes in 10 years.
That is accurate.
And yeah, and he goes, but once you crest that 10 year, that last one, you're going to have some here and there, but you've won your church. And that's when true ministry, you really start seeing the fruits of your labor taking hold of and going. And he's been a pastor of a few different churches, a lot of them based on locations where he's been. So those were kind of the moves that he had with him. But yeah, just his, just going through it, that even his church now, they're growing. They had to build a bigger church. They're selling their old church. He didn't make the point to tell us it was a manly church. You walk in with like a giant kind of rock, like wall thing with manly colors, because church should be manly. And those are his words. But just that, you just do it. Like how he could lead his church into this transition, into a new building, into to go through. He's like, I have them. They will do kind of what I want them to do. As long as I present present it and to do it. I think, and that's what most new pastors want, but maybe in the commercialism and the fact that we have fast food and we always have kind of things on demand, that we don't, pastors don't want to wait the time to get the fruit. They want it right away. You know, I'm sure pastors have said in 10 years, I want to double this church, you know, and like no one comes for 3 years and the church has even lost people. And now it's like, wait, with it. And I think you just, when we need to consider that even as a lay person, so I have a seminary degree, I have no desire at this time to be a pastor. And which, you know, I'm not seeking it. And even my pastor's like, man, I think that's a good choice, you know, and talking with them. But just, you know, having that vision, I think we're just short-sighted. And then, and kind of even mentioning earlier that the churches should be looking for people to pastor. It shouldn't just be my internal call. It should be confirmed by other godly people looking at me and saying like, look, he could do this. Let's train him up. We need to, let's send him to seminary to help him on some of that other stuff, you know, and use seminary for what seminary is for. But then just have the church start building up its leaders and to be ones to do it. I think, and that's where we've kind of, again, commercialized it. You mentioned it, the Voting Balcony, we ship off to seminary and then they just go someplace without having that intentions of, look, we're going to send you to seminary, but we want you to come back. We want to train you, because seminary, while it's beneficial and there's a lot to be learned, seminary is a sterile environment in which you can be a heretic and learn how not to be a heretic and how you phrase things. But you know, I might have learned how to do a wedding, but I don't know how to do a wedding. you know, and just sure. There's the experiences that come with it, which again has to be done in the local church.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you completely. I think we have this idea that when a church is pastorless, we've got to immediately start looking for the guy on the outside to bring in. I think the biblical pattern is probably more raising up guys on the inside to be your pastor. You know, what is more beneficial, the guy you don't know who it takes him 10, 15, 20 years before you get to trust him, or the guy that you watched, you know, your last pastor baptized him and your last pastor married him and his wife, and now he's still serving faithfully and, you know, this sort of a thing. And I also think that as a church culture, we need to place a lot more value on the ordination process and not be so quick and easy to ordain men to ministry without being very cautious. And certainly not every church is being careless with it, but I think there are a number that are. We put more value on the seminary degree than we do on the ordination and the church that you know, identified that calling. And like you said, seminary is very helpful. There are things that you can learn in seminary that you can't learn necessarily at your church, and vice versa. But we ought to have a church culture as such that when a man comes presenting himself as a candidate for ministry, pastoral ministry, I should be able to call the church that ordained him, barring some weird circumstance, and talk to them. What was it that let you know, that gave you the idea this man was called to be able to teach and preach, you know, before we go any further in a discussion with him? What was it about him that helped you identify that calling in him that then sent him off to seminary? And we just don't see that happening all that often. There are some faithful churches that do, but not nearly enough.
Well, as we begin to bring this to a close here, maybe in the last 10 minutes or so, maybe we can shift the focus to the church and the responsibility there. Because one of the things I mentioned that I wanted to kind of do on this was those churches that are looking for a pastor, or committees that are trying to find a pulpit committee or such, to trying to find a pastor to come and fill that pulpit. Some of the things maybe they could ask, you know, those pastors coming in, questions wise, to kind of see, is this going to be somebody that's going to be able to come in and we could really work with and grow with? And you mentioned, you know, already, you know, calling the pastor that ordained them and trying to get some information there. But just really seeing where they are, so that when that church is getting to really ask some of these good questions. For example, I listened to a recent interview of a church pastor that they're trying to come fill the pulpit. And I listened to some of the questions that was being asked, and I was just like, this is not great questioning. You're not really finding out good theological truths from this guy. You're not really finding things. You're just trying to ask people, like, what's your hobbies? Like, that, right. I can see saying, hey, you want to ask maybe something not so theological to just kind of get to know how the guy operates, but I mean, you really want to get to know if this guy is going to be good for the church. Is he going to come in? Is he going to be able to deal with issues when they arise? Have you dealt with any issues of church, you know, discipline, or any issues of splits within a church? How did you handle those things, or when confrontation happened? Things like that. Maybe you can speak to some of that.
So I think helpful questions have nothing to do with, I think one of the most unhelpful questions a search committee can ask is, what can you do to help us grow numerically? That's not up to me to grow numerically. And anything I do that generates numerical growth is probably going to be unhelpful in the long run. What they can do, and you touched on it, you know, talk us through your plan for discipleship. Give us a 5, 10, 15 year, 20 year plan for discipling our people and raising up new disciples, and then equipping the people we have to themselves also make disciples. Have you dealt with church discipline issues? Or if it's your first pastorate, let's hypothetically talk through a church discipline issue. What would you do? What's the end goal? And really, you know, the Bible talks about letting a man be examined. And that has nothing to do with what his plans are to get numerical growth or any of those things. And it just comes down to, they need to hear from the candidate for their, you know, for pastor, that they need to hear from the candidate that he has intentions of setting a course. So I tell any of our interns that come through that pastoring is like piloting a gigantic cruise ship. You have your starting destination, and you know where you want to go, which should be Christ exaltation in all things and glorification and disciple making. But you can't make a 90-degree turn and get there. You'll tear the ship apart. You have to set your course. This is where I'm at. This is where I need to be. What's the best route to get there? And then it's a series of small corrections and adjustments and recorrections and adjustments. And sometimes you get a church that's a little more willing and you can make a sharper turn than most. But most of the time, it's a curve, and you're setting a longevity course. They need to look for a man who's interested in being faithful. Let a man be there who talks about, well, you know, in 5, 10, 15 years, I'd like to see this sort of discipleship ministry in place, not program, I hate that word. I'd like to see this sort of ministry in place or evangelistically reaching the community in this particular aspect. And also, search committees need to be really careful about the almighty master's degree. Check and see if a man's been trained in seminary. That's very helpful, but it is not the end all be all. I know plenty of men with zero seminary, zero college, who could hold their weight preaching with MacArthur, Spurgeon, you know, any of the big guys, Whitfield, Edwards, all those guys. And then I know guys with a doctorate from Southern and some other places and what have you, who probably have no business in the pulpit whatsoever. So, you know, it's fine to say we'd prefer someone with seminary training. It's fine to say we'd prefer someone with X amount of experience, but don't say we won't even look at a resume if that's not your situation, because you miss out on some guys who can handle God's word very effectively, who have a heart for pastoral ministry. They just may not have, for whatever circumstance, had the, you know, the formal education behind it for a number of reasons. And so we don't want to limit who God leads to us by placing restrictions on them that the Bible doesn't even place on them. You know, we just need to examine them by 1 Timothy 3, stick really closely to that, and then branch out from there to make sure that what they are prepared to do is going to meet the needs of ministry and discipleship in the church.
Yeah. And kind of what, now this is coming from a seminary class, and to understand that as a lay person, if on a pastor nominating committee or whatever you want to call it, pastor search committee, by default, I am not a professional. And if I'm a professional church finder, like pastor finder, there's probably something wrong with the church to begin with. Right. And so just to understand that, you know, there are some things that even in questions that I ask should reflect what this pastor and the training he has had, whether seminary or not. And even to think of like asking a pastor, you know, they've been to the worship service. Okay, what is one thing you don't like about a worship service? What would you want to change about it? And while it kind of puts them on the spot, I think part of it reveals their character, what they think about these things. And, you know, in the class I took, my professor is very much, if you're a pastor in front of a committee, the one who doesn't talk the most, ask them, what do they like about the church and what do they not like about the church? And I think, and so in the same way, you know, to get, what is the pastor's kind of initial thoughts of what he is doing? I think there is also, while asking good theological questions is beneficial, sometimes they can just give you an answer and not believe it. So you need to find that balance of kind of how their theology shapes how they think worship should be, how the church should be going. You know, and I think this is especially important if you're not like in an elder-led church, and where this pastor kind of has has kind of this universal power over everything, and just and just working with that. I think, and so you have to do it, because I'm sure if Elevation Church would have asked Stephen Verdick, fresh out of Southern, what he thought about deep theological things, he could probably answer to the way they want it. So I think even as a churchgoer, you have to go and question their ministries. In fact, I would probably even ask, how do you intend to grow the church? Because I think it's a valid question that a pastor should be considering, how to grow the church. I think, and that answer is telling. Even if they would say, look, my job is to equip you for you to go share the gospel. That's how we're going to grow this church. It's a very telling answer on how he thinks and what he's going to expect from me as, you know, being in his congregation. I think those are the types of questions you're going to want to ask. You know, it's good to ask him, as you said, Ricky, you know, their hobby, maybe get to know them just a little bit. But there is some good questions of kind of, where does this theology going to lead, and what does he's going to expect from me as a church member?
Yeah. Yeah. I think with what you were saying there too, is I think so often putting the emphasis on the church asking questions to this pastor, but that pastor asking questions to the church, as you said there, Mike, like just seeing who's sitting there in this, maybe a question answer time with the church that's going to be voting on you coming in, seeing the one that's sitting there quietly and asking them certain questions, because then it's ultimately going to help you as a pastor maybe coming into this place to realize and see, is this going to be a good fit for my family? Is it going to be something where if I go in there, it's going to be a problem or issues that can cause problems within my family, or on the vice versa, those people asking questions or making statements there, realizing that maybe this pastor isn't the best fit for us. And if that was the case, then that may cut down on what we see of so many pastors leaving from one place to another place. And as you said, Jason, earlier, I think getting upfront and personal with the congregation and the church, with the pastor maybe coming in, about the financial aspect of this. This is what we look to do. If there may be a church that says, hey, look, right at this moment, we don't have the means to fully fund a pastor, you know, where he may have to be bivocational, but our goal is to cut the budget, do whatever we can to make that the priority so that you don't have to have a second job. And then maybe we'll expand on missions in other countries with missionaries and so forth, or whatever it may be. But our goal is to get to within a year having you fully funded, or you know, setting a timeline, because those things could really be beneficial to the pastor coming in and to that congregation of knowing, here's where we want to go together as a church and ultimately grow and see the fruit of this be blessed.
Yeah, well said. Yeah, I agree with that. Good, but those are very good points for sure.
And I mentioned it earlier, but I think associations help. Like if we have a church and we know other like-minded churches, to ask them, if I'm looking for a pastor, what do you have? What men do you see or you've been training who you think is ready to take a church? And even with some sort of working with them where that pastor is still overseeing and helping with it, you know, just because now you have someone in a similar location, there is some more accountability. It's not just some guy who's moving halfway across the nation to come to the church. I think, and just kind of use that means, I think, is also a good idea for if I was, my church needed a new pastor in that way, to get someone local who's in the area who has a love for those people already. I think it's a important way, and kind of work out from there.
Yeah, I think that could be very helpful, and that will take, you know, the church culture kind of stopping this us versus them mentality. You know, you're the like-minded Baptist church on this corner. We're the like-minded Baptist church on that corner. We're opposed to one another, instead of viewing it as we're trying to accomplish the same the same goal. So let's focus on discipleship, and whoever the Lord brings into our congregation is who he brings. And we're not going to worry about, you know, are we getting the new person in town to come to our church? Are they going to your church and seeing it, you know, and that would take a, I like what you're saying. That would just, in part, depending on the association. I know it's a problem in Dallas, the whole, you know, how many people do you have? Well, how many people do you have? And it's, you know, sort of a mess, a competitive mess for some. But if you can get rid of some of that mentality, then yeah, by all means, us working together as a body, though we may be in different congregations, to say, hey, we've got this guy and he's not just zealous for the Lord, he's clearly called to pastor. Obviously, we have a pastor, so there's not a need for him right here, but we know you guys need a pastor, so here's his information, you know, think about giving him a look. I think that could be very helpful to a church trying to find their next pastor.
Yeah. Well, I'm praying that this episode here of G220 Radio, episode number 425, is helpful, is edifying, and will be encouraging to those out there who may say they're called to pastor, and this will maybe give you some thoughts as you're thinking this through, maybe going to your elders or pastors in your church or elder men, and maybe if they're not elders, but men who've been walking with the Lord for a while, and asking them, do you see or recognize this in me? And then for maybe the churches that are looking for a pastor and not wanting to see somebody come and then a year or two later leave, trying to find somebody that's going to be long-term in that church and see that church grow regardless of the numbers, but desiring to have that happen, but most importantly, growing in the understanding of God's word and discipleship of the people within that church. I want to, real quick, we are going to be giving away a CSB Bible. I don't know if you read the CSB Bible, but we're going to be giving away a CSB Spurgeon Study Bible. And so, yeah, I sprung that one on you. But we're going to be giving away a CSB Spurgeon Study Bible. And what you need to do is the last 10 episodes of G220 Radio, if you've listened to them, hopefully you have, go ahead and write us a short little essay on what you learned from that show, what was encouraging about that show, what you didn't like about that show, even if you found some things in it that, you know, you didn't really care for. We want to hear it all, but give us a short essay on one of the shows that stood out to you in the last 10 episodes of G220 Radio. Send it to g220radio@gmail.com. Again, that's g220radio@gmail.com. And then in 2 weeks, we will announce the winner, and I will send you out the CSB Spurgeon Study Bible.
So,
Mike, you're not qualified.
15,000 words. I'm not qualified?
You can have your wife send one in, and maybe she can win it. So there we go.
Is it signed by Spurgeon himself?
Well, it says it is. I don't know, but you know, so we got here. That. It's a black one. Yeah. So, anyways, that's been G220 Radio for tonight. We do appreciate it, Pastor Jason. Any last thoughts or words on the conversation tonight? Maybe something that you wanted to bring up that we didn't bring it out. Any last thoughts as we consider this topic here? And close it out.
And just an encouragement. I think you guys covered it really well, but just an encouragement to any pastors or would-be pastors listening. Go to wherever the church you're at or whatever the church you're called to, and just set a course to be faithful. Just be faithful in the scripture. Be faithful and love the people. A wise man told me once, he said, you know, when I was taking my first pastorate, he said, preach the word, shepherd the people, and you'll do fine. And I found that to be true over and over again, even with the, you know, the 1 year blip, the 4 year blip, the 6 year and the 9 year, we've definitely had some of those instances at the church I'm at, that have all worked themselves out, you know, with love and scripture and whatnot over time. But yeah, just set a course to be faithful, and don't get your feelings hurt too easy, because it is not an easy road. Ministry is not an easy road, but it is well worth it.
Yeah. Amen. Amen. And that's been G220 Radio for tonight. I hope you enjoyed the program, and we will see you again next week.